Hello there, and welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. My name is Caleb, and today I'm joined by a guest, Geraldo Camacho, who is an author at 1517. Some people may have gotten the chance to meet him. He did attend the Here We Still Stand conference last year. He came and sat in at least on the Thinking Fellows episode, and I know that you attended many of the other events. But the reason you are on the show today, and I'll let you introduce yourself in a second here, but is because you recently published a translation of Luther's commentary on the Epistle to the Galatians with 1517. It's a fantastic addition to our catalog, and we're glad to be able to sell it and get it to people. And what we're going to do on this episode is I'm just going to ask you some questions about that translation, how you got into doing it, and why people may want to pick up this version of the book. Many of our listeners may have read or been familiar with Luther's commentary on the Galatians, but I think actually many people are familiar with some of the concepts out of it and maybe have taken the class that we offer from the 1517 Academy on it, but haven't actually read through it themselves, and this may be a great way for them to do that. So could you please introduce yourself, Geraldo?
Okay. Thanks, Caleb, and it's really a treat for me to be at this podcast and introduce, really not myself, but commentary on Galatians, Luther's commentary on Galatians, the 1535 edition, Latin edition in 1535. And I don't know if you realize, Caleb, how serendipitous is the fact that we are having this interview today, July 3, because it was on a July 3, 1531, that Luther strode to the lectern there at the University of Wittenberg, and it was probably in the evening, and he proceeded to begin his first lecture on Galatians. It was on July 3, and he begins that lecture. I don't know if you have your book with you, but it is the section that begins on Roman numeral page. Let me see if I can find it here.
Yeah, it's somewhere before the main chapters. Yeah, sometimes navigating a book when it's been adapted is difficult.
Right. It's on page 24 of the Roman numerals, and he begins, "I have once again taken up the task in the name of the Lord to expound on this epistle of St. Paul to the Galatians." And he begins his lecture with what is found in most translations and volumes of this book as Martin Luther's introduction. They seem at first as separate sections of the commentary, as if they might have been added before or after the book was written. But these were his actual lecture began with this brief introduction, and then with what follows on St. Paul's argument in the epistle to the Galatians, where he asks, "First, we are compelled to state the main argument of this epistle. What did Paul intend to do with this epistle?" And so he continues on. And as you can probably tell from going through the book already, is that this book is unique in that it is organized by lectures and dates when Luther gave those particular lectures.
Yeah, a lot of listeners should know this about many of the works of Luther and Melanchthon and other reformers, is in fact that some of what we have commentary-wise from them is not actually handwritten by them, but is notes copied by students or by scribes when they gave lectures either at the university or even were preaching in various churches.
That's right. So it is what I tried to do in this book. I tried to capture the spoken feel of the lecture. because when I got into translating the Latin, it seemed to me that what I had before me in the Latin text was an actual transcript of the lecture. And in fact, it is attested to be that way by Georg Rohrer and the others who helped him with some of the note-taking. It seems that they invented a shorthand of their own invention. And I don't think we should expect to see in the Weimar edition a shorthand as such. But when one reads Rohrer's abbreviated notes, it seems like one word or a phrase stands for several words or phrases. And then in the Weimar edition, which is the most complete edition we have of the commentary, you can see Rohrer's full or lengthy Latin notes that he seems to have written out after the lecture based on his actual notes taken during class. And if you look carefully at Weimar's notes, I mean at Rohrer's notes, you will find in these little tiny boxes, it took me a while to figure out what they were, but they are little tiny boxes throughout his notes, and in those boxes, he has the date when the lecture began. And so that's how I was able to organize it into lectures, by looking at those date stamps as such on Rohrer's work. And then I put them at the approximate, and I say approximate because he did not put those date stamps on the actual text.
Yeah, they were in the margins. And that's, again, something of note to people who aren't used to working in older primary source texts in Latin or Greek, is that in order to faithfully maintain the content of what was written, often those who were transcribing or carrying on traditions, especially when it came to scripture and things like that, if they had notes or possible corrections to, say, punctuation or something like that in there, they would typically do it in the margins of a text as not to interfere with what's actually been recorded there.
So what you have in this book that makes it unique, among other things, is the actual organization of these 41 lectures, because each chapter of Galatians, the actual commentary on Galatians, it's pretty long. You know, it's not like you're going to sit down and read all of chapter 1, and then you're going to read all that he comments in chapter 2, etc. It's a long volume. It's a long work. But when you see it organized by lectures, you can even say, hey, we're going to have a retreat at my church, and it'd be fun as part of the retreat activities to read lectures 12, 13, and 14 out loud in a group session and discuss those. Or various kinds of church events, celebration of the Reformation or whatever. This book is organized in such a way that it lends itself to reading the lectures, and particularly reading them out loud. And that's another issue of how this book, how I translated the book, choosing words that I think, in my perception, translated best the out loud lecturing that Luther gave. And many times I read the Latin text out loud just to make sure. It is in the Latin, it is not classical Latin. You can tell that it wasn't written as a literary work in Latin, but it reads more like a transcript. There are many phrases that are not finished, and then he takes on a little bit of a different subject. And it seems that at that point, Luther was answering a question, because the questions were not included in the text. But it seems, by the way he answers, that he was answering a question, and then he goes back to the original work. So as you read this, you can feel the dynamics of Luther in the classroom. And it is a marvelous, for me, it was a marvelous experience to work through this commentary. And at times I felt like I was in that lecture hall listening to Luther. And at times I had to take my keys, my hands off the keyboard, and just in awe, think and rethink and reflect and worship. Yes, worship on the grandeur of Christ, as Luther describes Christ as the all-sufficient Savior throughout this marvelous work.
Yeah, that's one of the you know, fantastic things about being able to jump into texts either in Latin or Greek when it comes to these theological matters. And in fact, you can find, if you are familiar with reading many of the translations of Luther when it comes to works like his commentary on Galatians or the catechisms, even little things like his Heidelberg Disputation, you know, there are different styles of interpretation, especially when it comes to translation, where one might choose to be more wooden and literal according to the manuscript that they have, or that there might be a certain feeling or background that to a text that a translator can include in. And I'm excited about your translation, because what it really seems to do is try to capture the ethos of what Luther was doing in giving lectures, and also by identifying that these are separate parts, that we read this as and sell this as one volume, but the way that Luther gave it was in different lectures. He certainly didn't sit down and do this in one sitting, and that for the reader, that is a very approachable way to do this as well. Because one of the things when you're a publishing house like the New Reformation publications that we have at 1517 is considering, will people get through this book or will it sit on their shelf? And length has a lot to do with that in the modern world. People sort of read less and less as we have more interactive technologies, especially video in our lives, TV, Netflix, and the like. But when your commentary breaks things into very digestible sections and is suggested to do so as such, I think this may be a more approachable way for lay readers and lay theologians to approach this fantastic work in Luther's collection.
I did not try at all to diminish Luther's sarcasm, his sense of humor. Sometimes his very sharp language. In fact, at one point, you can tell he's building up this argument against the false apostles to the Galatians. And you can tell that he's really into it. He's really going into them and what he thinks of their doctrine. And he stops for a moment. It seems like he stops for a moment, and he inserts within the lecture a couple of Greek words, okay? And the Greek words are really more like swear words. If you understand, I had to double check in the Greek. Yeah. They're really nasty, nasty words that he would not have dared use in Latin, but he moved them over into Greek because in Greek, wow, they sound more like Koine, biblical Greek, etc. It was politically correct. And I just had to laugh when I saw that kind of dynamic that Luther carried on with his students. And many times, you can almost hear the students chuckle when he uses his sense of humor. To give you an example, in the preface, even though the preface was not part of the lectures, in the preface you can already pick this up when he says, "I can hardly believe I was so wordy when I gave these public lectures on Paul's epistle to the Galatians, except for this little exhibit." And then, you know, the Latin is libellus exhibit, and libellus is a tiny thing. And yet, you're looking at this huge, over 500-page volume, even in the Latin, and he calls it, except for this little exhibit.
Yeah, he calls it a very little book, huh? That's very interesting.
A very little book, yeah. So, but yet there in the preface, he cites one of my favorite quotes. And it's the first paragraph of the preface, for he says, "My heart is governed by only this one fundamental truth, namely faith in Christ. He is from whom, by whom, and toward whom all my theological studies revolve continually, day and night." And that fact that his heart was governed by the article, as he called it, the article of justification, is marvelous, because that means that whatever interactions he had with people, with life, with concepts, with doctrines, his heart was governed by the article of justification. He was able to make decisions on how to relate to people based on this article of justification. And that is why this book is so tremendous, because it if you're open to the teaching, it does exactly the same. It brings the teaching of justification by faith so thoroughly into one's mind and heart, it bathes, it saturates you, that you begin to look at life through the lenses of justification, and the dynamic you use for understanding justification by faith is the same dynamic, and to divide law and grace and works and faith is the same dynamic then that you approach to everyday life, your relationship with your children, your relationship with your wife, your relationship to your work. So it is just amazing how this quote from him, that his heart is governed by the article of justification by faith.
Yeah, it really is a hallmark of Luther and Lutheran thought that it does, like you said, it takes over in areas where, if you were just examining this sort of an academic way, you might not fully see the picture of how justification affects, being a father, the way you treat children, or the way you treat your wife, the way you approach your job. And, that really does, everything Luther does ties back to justification, including the way he views people's vocations and their daily life. That is one of the things that we do try to capture here on this podcast and everything we do at 1517, in carrying on, hopefully, what Luther did there. And Galatians is a prime example of this. This is one of those core works in Luther where the doctrine of justification really does come out, just full bore, as well as, the division between law and gospel throughout the various chapters. It really is a fantastic resource for people to have at home. I want to encourage listeners of this show to go to shop.1517legacy.com and go check out this book, because, again, like everything we sell, it's very reasonably priced, and it's a fantastic resource that you don't have to read cover to cover in one or, a handful of sittings to get the value out of it. Like you said, it could be very useful for church groups. This is great for personal study, reflection, and worship. So my next question for you is interesting, because from what I understand, you're not Lutheran. So my question would be, why translate Luther, and especially such a large volume from Luther?
Okay. I hate to get away from the work itself, because the subject is not me, but... And I will talk a little bit about that, but I want to highlight something else that I found throughout the book that I have not heard many highlight. And again, I think it's because of my familiarity with the book. First, I translated this volume into Spanish. The Spanish edition was finished in 2011. And even though I finished it then, now that I did the English for 1517, and with lots of help I got from Steve Burns at 1517, this is a much tighter edition. I like it much better. So I'll have to go back to the Spanish and sharpen up the edition. But my familiarity with the text, I've been able to highlight a few things. And one of the things, Caleb, is Luther's prophetic voice with regards to the doctrine of justification. He was not very positive about the future of the doctrine of justification. Time and time again throughout this commentary, he talks about how the doctrine will be lost. He says, every Christian should learn this doctrine diligently so that he may truly define what is the law, what is its proper use and function, what are its limits, what is its power, its time frame, and its end. Nearly all have this pernicious and pestilent opinion rooted in them by nature that the law justifies. That's why I fear, he said, that when we have passed on, this doctrine will once again become disfigured and obscured, for the whole world will once again be covered with darkness and errors before the coming of the final day. And tell me if that's not what we see throughout a great deal of evangelical Christianity today, that this doctrine has been disfigured and obscured, and we are more like the evangelical Christianity today mirrors more the Council of Trent than it does Luther's commentary on Galatians.
That's very true. I mean, and I love, so Alistair McGrath has a book reflecting on Martin Luther's theology of the cross, where he talks about how Luther's cross focus, that is his, you know, strong emphasis on the justification and the via the atoning death and resurrection of Christ, is a corrective to what we will naturally lean against in every generation. We will try to get away from the cross of Christ, and Luther saw that as well, and saw that the only corrective is for the church to know this, to believe this, to preach it, to hear it daily, and not just preachers, but the lay as well. And, you know, lay education was extremely important in Luther's Reformation for this precise point, that you need Christians to know and hear the true gospel in order for it to live in every age, because of our natural inclination towards sin and towards attempting to justify ourselves via the law.
Now, you mentioned before how this commentary can be used without reading it cover to cover. One thing that I've done with the book, because I've had the advanced review copy, as a few have had, you can practically open any page in the book, and you can use it for a brief, short devotional, and you will find stuff in that one page that will feed your soul for that one day. It is marvelous. There's hardly any page that you will not open where you will not be comforted by grace, by the gospel, by Christ, by this passion that Luther exerted through his teaching, as is recorded here in this book. So don't anybody feel that this book has to be read from cover to cover. You can choose practically any page, and you will get a lot from it, and use it as a devotional that way, or as I said, you can use it in church groups, or just reading it by lectures. Now, why did I take on this work, and if I'm not a Lutheran? Let me just answer that, Caleb, by saying that I am a Gentile Lutheran. If you can accept that, I am a Gentile Lutheran. I mean, I did not grow up Lutheran. I grew up in a very sectarian denomination, a very law-oriented denomination in Colombia, South America. My father was a preacher within that denomination, and he preached sectarian doctrine. But I remember as a child that when my father preached on the cross of Christ, he became a different man. He changed. It was passionate. It came from the heart. He didn't read his notes. And he didn't quote the prophetess of the sect. It was all from the Bible. And that began to touch my heart early on. And eventually I did become a minister of that particular sect. And I'm not hiding anything here. I grew up in the Seventh-day Adventist denomination, and for many years I was a Seventh-day Adventist preacher, teacher, and even church leader here in Southern California, until I could not stand it any longer, and the gospel drove me, literally drove me out of the Seventh-day Adventist church. And I think Rod Rosenblatt will understand me when I talk about this, because Rod had an encounter early on in his evangelical experience with a fellow by the name of Bob Brinsmead, who came out of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and very much in favor of the gospel of Jesus Christ. But it was a process. It was a long process. And when I found myself out of the Adventist Church, out of ministry, I had to feed my family. A lot of denominations do not want a former Seventh-day Adventist member, even in their church ranks, much even less as a minister of their church.
As a leader, so, within that.
Especially having been a leader, I had a very high position as a leader here in Southern California with the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And so I turned to court interpreting, and for many, many years, I interpreted in the courts as a certified court interpreter. I interpreted throughout Los Angeles, Orange County, Imperial County, San Bernardino, Riverside counties, serving the courts on an everyday basis. So I knew very well what is the law. And throughout that time, I was asked to do written transcripts of audio interviews of suspects, of inmates, of victims. And that's when I got a feel for how to translate a transcript so that what comes out as a written work for the jury to see must, above all, be precise. You must be accurate. You cannot make stuff up if a jury is going to decide somebody's life based on a transcript. So I learned to translate and do transcripts from English into Spanish, keeping the register, the tone of the voice, understanding how the ethos of the person that was speaking, all of those nuances of the spoken voice must be put into writing as best as possible. It cannot be done perfectly, but one must do it that way. And that's when I came to Luther's work. And don't ask me, I came to Luther slowly. From quotes here and there that friends sent me on my way to grace. Eventually I found Luther, Luther's commentary on Galatians. And I can say lots more about that.
No, that's a fantastic story, and about how, the reality of the gospel really does free people from those different law constructions that we make, in many denominations within evangelical Christianity, including many Lutheran congregations and Lutherans. Still, we find ourselves recapturing ourselves to our own law and sin, and how freeing the message of justification by grace through faith on account of Christ truly is. That the gospel has power to save.
I'm sure I have a book somewhere on my journey to faith, although it's not my journey. It was Christ bringing me on the journey to the cross. But as far as this work is concerned, I did first the work in Spanish, as I told you, and I was done. You know, when you finish something like this, you're burned out.
Yeah.
You don't even want to go back and read anything about anything. And it was my wife who kept on saying, you know, honey, why don't you just do a chapter or two into English and see how it goes? You have so many friends that speak English that they need to read this. And never intending ever to complete the work. I had self-published the Spanish edition because nobody, no Protestant or evangelical publishing house wanted to publish Luther. I found it so amazing. You know, I sent them drafts of chapters, and some of them would not even return a courtesy. We're not interested.
And that was the Spanish edition, so it wasn't even competing with the current, you know, with the older English editions.
Exactly. It was the first Spanish translation of this particular work. Later, after this after my Spanish translation, I found that somebody translated Theodore Grabner's English summarized version of this commentary into Spanish.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you're acquainted with Theodore Grabner's English summary. I call it the Reader's Digest edition of Luther's commentary. But I was reading the Grabner's edition in English, and I came across a paragraph where he translates imputed righteousness as a transfusion of righteousness. And that's where this translation was born. The minute I saw that, I said, that is nothing but Council of Trent infused righteousness. There is no difference at all between infused and injected or transfusion or whatever you want to call it. It just means that grace is poured into you so that you can obey, so that you can be made perfect, so that you eventually can become righteous. And at that particular point, when I was reading that translation of Grabner, is when I decided my wife is right. I needed to translate this, even if I have to self-publish it myself. And then there is another thing that I want to say, and I don't know if it's politically correct, although I haven't seen that the Thinking Fellows are politically correct all the time.
Yeah.
But I found that when you do a translation, you must be accurate and to the point, and you must translate everything that is said by the author. And there are many things that were left out in all of these translations. So when I decided to do my translation, I did a Google search, a library search of a modern English translation. And all I found was Grabner, and all I found was Fallows. And I did not know, not being Lutheran and not having gone to a Lutheran university, I did not know that there was such a thing as Yaroslav Pelikan's translation.
Yeah, the Pelikan edition is the common edition. That people who have done, I would say, at least academic work in Lutheranism in America will probably be familiar with. It's his translation that's included within Luther's works, American edition, essentially.
I think you're very kind in saying it is included. I would say is buried within all of those works. Because in all of my Google searches, his name did not come up. His translation did not come up. I did not find out there was a such a thing as Yaroslav Pelikan's edition of this commentary until 1517 had already accepted my manuscript. And one of Steve Burns sent it out to a couple of people, and someone said, "Hey, how does this relate to Yaroslav Pelikan?" Yeah. And Steve asked me, and I didn't. It was like, hello. It just shows you how non-Lutheran I am, and yet how Lutheran I am at the same time.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was so when I remember when you sent the manuscript to 1517, it was about a year ago, maybe just a little more than a year ago. That you did, and Steve, I was one of those people included on the email along with many of the fellows who are used to working in Latin, and one of our concerns was, well, are we going to run into problems with people claiming this is a copy of Pelikan? And you know, it was interesting to see that you know, he wasn't something you read before you did this. And in doing so, I would say, having read parts of your translation, there's not like an integrity issue with your translation at all. And in fact, I think the mission of what Pelikan's edition in Luther Works does is different than what you're doing. And it doesn't mean that the core meaning in the translation is different. And like I said, you know, translators have to make stylistic decisions based on the ethos of what they are, or what they're trying to do, and what they think the author is trying to do. And I enjoy your translation very much. Your English translation of this really does get across the emotion and the impact of Luther, which is one of the things I think in a lot of translations in Luther that we use, particularly in academic theology, are so wooden often. They lack emotion. When we talk about Luther, we talk about a bombastic, a fireball emotional preacher and teacher who, yeah, used colorful language and a loud voice. And then you get vanilla translations of things, and it seems very odd. And so this is, I really do enjoy your translation, and I definitely suggest listeners who have both read the commentary on Galatians before to include this in their library, and especially those who are, you know, listening to the fellows and adding books to their library as we go. As you know, we do book recommendations constantly on this show, and so I think this one is very high on the list for that. And again, I think this is a fantastic thing to buy alongside doing our free course. Dr. Rosenblatt has done lectures on Luther's commentary to the Galatians at various churches. We have those recorded on video, and we offer those as a free course at 1517 on the 1517 website. You can go to the 1517 website, and there's an Academy button there, and you could take that course while having this resource available to you at the same time.
Caleb, Steve has mentioned to me a couple of times, and I think Steve Burns is the director of publications. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
That somewhere down the pike, 1517 is going to look at the possibility of doing an audiobook out of this commentary. And I think that would be just fantastic, because sometimes as I'm driving down the road, I wish I could be listening to this as an audiobook. You know, most people, after they're done with a book, they don't want to see it, they don't want to do anything with it. But the more I go back to this work, I love it. I like it. Even as a translator, I like it, which is sort of an odd thing to say. And of course, it's the content of the book in which Christ is so highly exalted. And I know that some people have asked me, how would you summarize the book? What two words would you use to summarize the book? Well, we're talking about 500 and some pages, no? How would you summarize them in two words? But to me, the two words are, in Latin, are solus Christus, only Christ, or Christ alone. And then there are two other words related to those that are propter Christus, mm-hmm. on account of Christ. because it's on account of his life, death, and resurrection, his shed blood, that we are saved eternally. We are saved eternally. And it's through Christ. Nothing else matters in this commentary except the work of Christ. And our own work does not matter at all as far as our salvation. So those are my two words with which I summarize this huge work. It's solus Christus, propter Christus, on account of Christ or because of Christ. And that's what I carry in my heart and I bring with me and I take with me from the various years, almost 4 years, that I was working with this manuscript.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, those are excellent closing words. You have excellent timing as we approach the end of the time for this show. I just want to just add a couple things at the end here for listeners. This is available for sale right now. You can get it at shop.1517legacy.com or on Amazon. I will have links in the show notes of the podcast to this directly. So if you're listening on phone, show notes are either available by scrolling down on your podcasting app or tapping the cover art to turn it around, and there you can find direct links. If you are using a computer or some sort of desktop device, you can get it at our website, thinkingfellows.com. If you're listening to this episode, again, the show notes will be linked to the sales channels there. Like I said, it's very reasonably priced, and I would advise listeners not to fear the length of this book, as we've discussed in length on this show, that it's a valuable tool, whether you read the whole thing or whether you use it for sections, for Bible study, for devotion, for personal study and reflection. It's fantastic work. Thank you for joining me on this show, Geraldo. It was really great having you, and perhaps we can have you again sometime to cover perhaps maybe various chapters with this, and I would love to get you and Dr. Rosenblatt on the same episode on this type of chapter in the future.
Oh, I would love to. That would be a real treat. Thanks for having me on.
All right. We'll catch you next time.